Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Mario Ritter, Katie Weaver, Alice Bryant, and Bruce Alpert. Later, Anna Mateo will bring us this week's health report. But first, the Brazilian government has opened an investigation into the deaths of 10 members of an uncontacted indigenous tribe. Gold miners reportedly killed the tribe members in the Brazilian state of Amazonas. Officials in Amazonas opened the investigation after learning that the miners had talked about killing members of an uncontacted tribe. Brazil's National Indian Foundation said some of the miners were detained for questioning, but no deaths yet have been confirmed. The reports come on the week of the 10-year anniversary of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The document brings attention to the situation of indigenous people and creates standards for their survival and well-being. But advocates in Brazil say recognition of indigenous rights is making slow progress in the country. About 900,000 indigenous people live in Brazil. They are spread out among 300 tribes and speak many different languages. Native people struggle in the South American nation. Leaders and advocates say many do not have property rights. They may face violence from miners, ranchers, and loggers. And there is little money for protecting indigenous peoples' interests. However, more than 10% of Brazil's land is recognized territory for the indigenous population. Most of that land is in the rainforest of the Amazon River. The UN Declaration offers support for land demarcation, which provides some form of land rights to indigenous people. Alberto Torena is a Brazilian indigenous leader. He told the Thomson Reuters Foundation, "We see our rights being violated all the time. We depend on the land to live." He added, "With no demarcation, there is no health, no education. There is just a piece of land with heaps of people." Joana Chiavari is an expert at the Climate Policy Initiative in Brazil. She said the process of land demarcation to protect indigenous land has resulted in violence. Erica Yamada is a UN expert on indigenous rights. She said the number of killings of indigenous people in 25 nations increased by 100% to 281 in 2016 compared to the year before. She added that the number of killings in 2017 is, in her words, likely to be even more alarming. Some say invasions of indigenous territory have been increasing as Brazil cuts spending. Officials say the budget cuts are measures aimed at bringing Brazil out of its worst recession in decades.
A racially mixed crowd of demonstrators marched quietly Monday morning in the American city of St. Louis, Missouri. The demonstrators were protesting a court decision to drop charges against a white former police officer in the shooting death of a black man. The march followed 3 days of peaceful protests and 3 nights of violence in St. Louis. The unrest began when a judge said he found Jason Stockley not guilty in the 2011 death of Anthony Lamar Smith. The former officer had been charged with killing Smith after a car chase. Prosecutors accused Stockley of placing a gun on the body. They also said video recorded from his car during the chase captured the officer saying that he was planning to kill Smith. The judge ruled that the lawyers had failed to prove the shooting was not a justified use of force in self-defense. Protests started peacefully on Friday, with hundreds of people gathering in the streets of St. Louis. They held signs and shouted the words, "No justice, no peace." Some made their way to police headquarters, calling for police resignations. On Sunday, more than 1,000 people had gathered at police headquarters and then marched without trouble through the center of the city. Protesters also marched through 2 shopping centers in a wealthy area of St. Louis County. By sunset, most protesters had gone home. Those who remained grew increasingly angry as they returned to downtown St. Louis. Along the way, they broke windows and damaged other property. Police accused some demonstrators of firing an unknown substance on officers. Police said they seized weapons and arrested more than 80 people after demonstrators ignored orders to leave the area. Police Chief Larry O'Toole told reporters early Monday that some people attacked officers and threw stones at them. "We're in control," O'Toole said. "This is our city, and we're going to protect it." Racial tension in the St. Louis area is not new. In August 2014, 2 weeks of protests began in Ferguson, Missouri, after a white police officer shot and killed Michael Brown, an unarmed 18-year-old black man. That November, the decision not to charge the police officer fueled another week of protests, and a third protest was held in 2015 on the anniversary of Brown's death. I'm Katie Weaver.
The United States, South Korea, and Japan carried out military exercises with warplanes over the Korean Peninsula Monday. At the same time, world leaders were gathering for the United Nations General Assembly meeting. Russia and China began joint naval exercises in the area, adding to the military presence near the Korean Peninsula. The actions follow North Korea's test of a middle-range missile which flew over Japan Friday. The U.S. Defense Department said 2 bombers and 4 fighter planes flew over the Korean Peninsula and fired live weapons during a test. South Korean Defense Minister Song Yong-mu said the joint exercises are being carried out 2 to 3 times a month. Later, the planes joined four Japanese F-2 fighter planes over the sea near the island of Kyushu, Japan. The U.S. Pacific Command said the exercises support the ability to respond to any threat in the Indo-Asian Pacific theater at a moment's notice. The official Chinese news agency Xinhua said that Russia and China began naval exercises near the eastern port of Vladivostok. Xinhua Online said the naval exercises are to extend to the Sea of Okhotsk north of Japan. Reuters News Service says the joint naval exercises are the second part of related maneuvers between the countries in the Baltic Sea. On September 3rd, North Korea carried out its sixth and most powerful nuclear test. The UN Security Council answered 1 week later by approving a resolution placing stronger sanctions on the North. The issue of North Korea is expected to be discussed during this week's United Nations General Assembly meeting in New York. United States President Donald Trump has warned that he would not let North Korea threaten the U.S. or its allies. U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, has said North Korea's continued weapons tests present a serious security problem. What is really important with North Korea is that we try and push through as many diplomatic options as we have, she said. However, she added, if economic pressure does not work, there might be little more that the UN can do. China and Russia have called for a diplomatic solution and restarting talks. On Monday, China's foreign ministry spokesman Liu Kang said the most recent sanctions on North Korea were just approved. He called on all parties involved to put the sanctions into effect strictly rather than complicating the issue. Liu added that China supports improved relations between the two Koreas. On September 11th, the UN Security Council voted to place stronger restrictions on North Korea. They include limits on North Korea's oil imports and a ban on its exports of clothing products. The sanctions are meant to further pressure North Korea to end its nuclear and long-range missile programs. North Korea denounced the UN resolution, calling it an inhumane act of hostility against its people, system, and government. North Korea's official KCNA news agency said the country would not give up its weapons programs. The UN sanctions appear to be having an economic effect on the country. Reuters news agency reports that prices for gasoline and diesel fuel appear to have increased sharply since the last nuclear test. I'm Mario Ritter.
United States officials say the country needs more foreign workers to keep some American businesses from struggling. The Department of Homeland Security has announced plans to make 15,000 additional H-2B visas available. It says businesses can use the visas to offer employment to temporary non-agricultural foreign workers before the end of September. The decision comes as Congress is considering ways to fix the immigration system. Many lawmakers say they want to reform the system while guaranteeing jobs for U.S. citizens. Yet, many groups argue that current federal rules fail to protect foreign visa holders from discrimination and other abuses. The Center for Migrant Rights, or CDM, is one of them. It notes the rules do not protect the visa holders from job misrepresentation, payments to employment agencies, and even cheating by an employer. American businesses use the H-2B visa when offering seasonal employment to non-immigrant foreign workers. But the work must not be agricultural, and businesses must show evidence that there are not enough American workers willing and able to perform these services. Four women who came to the United States on H-2B visas were part of a group discussion last week in Washington, D.C. The CDM organized the event to raise awareness about a system it says often treats human beings like property. Adarello Hernandez is a former H-2B worker from Hidalgo, Mexico. At the discussion, she said, "In the workplace, there were about 80 of us, women, and we had a hard time." Hernandez said she looked for a job for 2 years before finally receiving an H-2B visa to work at a chocolate packing factory in Louisiana.
Men who worked at the factory earned higher wages by carrying and handling boxes. Women, however, had to pack chocolates on assembly lines. Hernandez said the women were not given time away for sickness. "We weren't able to make complaints because if we did make complaints, we were threatened by the manager," she said. "We were told we didn't have a right to file complaints because we didn't have rights here in the United States." But after 4 seasons as an H-2B visa worker, Hernandez and about 70 other workers fought for better work conditions. She said that although conditions improved, the company decided not to give her or her coworkers jobs again. The statement of Hernandez and 34 other worker stories is part of a report about gender inequality in U.S. labor migration programs. CDM and the University of Pennsylvania Transnational Legal Clinic worked together on the research. One suggestion in the report is that all temporary labor migration programs be required to follow the same rules and protections. The goal is to stop abusive employers and recruiters from avoiding legal punishment for worker abuse. The Economic Policy Institute says about 1.4 million people are recruited to work in the U.S. each year through temporary work visas. These include H-1B for specialty jobs, H-2B, J-1, the Exchange Visitor Program, and TN for Canadians and Mexicans in specialized jobs under the North American Free Trade Agreement, or NAFTA. These visas may be different, but immigration and labor organizations report that recruited foreign workers face common abuses. In 2015, the Department of Labor and Department of Homeland Security took action against abuse within the H-2B system. Its hope was to prevent the abuse of workers and ensure that U.S. workers knew about available jobs.
Rosa is a doctor who specializes in treating animals. She asked that her real name not be made public for fear of punishment. She was unable to join the CDM event because the U.S. government rejected her request for a tourist visa. But she provided a statement that was read during the event. Although the U.S. government had no problem offering me a TN work visa at the employer's request, it won't allow me to visit the country as a tourist, Rosa's statement said. Anyway, that's not going to stop me from sharing my story. Rosa is a former TN visa worker. She received permission for an animal scientist position in Wisconsin. She was excited about the chance to work at a place where she would use skills she gained as a graduate from a top Mexican university. Rosa says her employer was dishonest. They promised her specific wages and then failed to pay them, her statement said. They were also abusive. The supervisors would yell at us constantly and tell us that our visa was only good for obeying orders, she said. I cleaned animal troughs, unloaded them from trucks. As the only woman, they would also give me jobs they considered women's work, cleaning the bathroom or the kitchen.
Rachel Micah Jones is the head of CDM. She said foreign workers need protections, including the right to understand a written agreement before signing one with a U.S. company. Immigration conservatives agree about the need to protect visa workers, but they also express concern about the needs of American workers. Jessica Vaughn is director of policy studies at the Center for Immigration Studies. She said she agrees these visa programs can be good, but she says there is a big problem with employers giving jobs to workers they can pay less and who may replace American and legal immigrant workers. Vaughn told VOA the solution is not necessarily to end the programs, but to change them, and for government agencies to do a better job of enforcing laws. I'm Bruce Alpert.
And I'm Alice Bryant. From VOA, Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. It is back to school time in the United States. Back to school stress is different for different ages. Younger children may feel scared to leave their families. Making new friends and dealing with bullying can also cause stress for students. Older students may stress about their appearances, grades, and getting into college. Many schools have events and programs that can help to cut down on student stress. Some offer open houses. At these events, parents can meet the teachers and see where their children are learning. At the start of a school year, many schools invite students and their families to orientations. These events give everyone a chance to become more familiar with the environment. Families can practice their school commute. Students can find out where their classrooms are located. The American Psychological Association says parents can better help their children if they meet teachers and classmates and know the daily routine and school environment.
For younger children, seeing their parents in their classroom can help make it seem more familiar. And even older students can benefit from events and activities that make the school seem like a friendly place. Many schools have mentoring programs. In these programs, older students help younger ones understand the rules and culture of the school. Communicating with students is also good advice for teachers. Marianne Idala began teaching in the New York school system in 1962. She retired 39 years later in 2001. Ms. Idala suggests that teachers share details about themselves. These personal conversations can help to create meaningful connections in the classroom. They can also reduce nervousness and stress among the students. Ms. Idala adds that teachers should also invite children to talk about their families and describe what they did over the summer.
Well, the teacher has to be very open. The teacher has to tell them something also about herself, so they feel a connection, and then you can ask them if they want to share some of the things that they did in July and August with their families or friends or camp experiences, activities that they were in, and places that they might have visited.
The American Psychological Association also reminds parents to talk to their children. Ask them what they liked about their past school experiences, and then find ways to have similar experiences in the new school year. The APA adds that sometimes stress of the school year is too much for you and your child to handle on your own. If that happens, find a mental health professional to talk to. Carrie Ann Tochi is an educational expert who has worked with families to help their children succeed in school. Ms. Tochi advises parents to not overschedule your child with extracurricular activities. Use technology to remind you of events and to keep schedules organized, and to set clear goals.
Well, starting the new school year, we want to be mindful about not overloading our schedule. So only the extracurricular activities that are mandatory. I also recommend using technology when it's helpful. You might want to use the Reminders app on your phone and your child's phone, maybe Google Calendar, sync your phone with Google Calendar, and to have specific goals and to visualize those goals with your child.
Ms. Tochi also suggests that if someone in the family has a learning style close to that of the student, that person could help with homework. This relationship may help cut down on stress. Everyone needs a break from work. Family meals and outings can help everyone relax. A family game night or walk in a park together can give parents and children a chance to have fun as a family. Education advisor Carrie Ann Tochi also reminds parents to let their children take a break while doing homework. She says if a student has hours of homework to complete, taking several 10-minute breaks can reduce stress. Ms. Tochi adds that taking breaks while studying can help a student remember or retain what they have learned.
It's really, really important to take breaks. If we don't take breaks, we're more likely to create more stress. And research shows that you're more likely to retain information that way.
The teenagers who responded to the APA survey listed the ways they like to unwind or relax. The top most common ways are listening to music, playing video games, going online, spending time with family or friends, exercising or walking. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Anna Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.